Our Old Testament lesson is from Jeremiah chapter 29, verses 5 through 14. And the context for this is that around the year 597, Babylon conquered Judea and the capital city of Jerusalem. And they took some of the youngest and best and brightest with them into exile in Babylon. And Jeremiah, meanwhile, was left behind. And the prophet Jeremiah wrote a letter and sent it to the exiles in Babylon. And maybe the exiles were hoping to hear something like, not too much longer, and all the negotiations will be worked out, and you'll be able to come home. Maybe they were hoping to hear something like that, or they were hoping to hear that God would miraculously deliver them at that moment, bring them through the desert back home. But this is what Jeremiah said instead. This is his letter to the exiles in Babylon. Build houses and settle down. Cultivate gardens and eat what they produce. Get married and have children. Then help your sons find wives and your daughters find husbands in order that they too may have children. Increase in number there so that you don't dwindle away. Promote the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because your future, depends on its welfare. The Lord of heavenly forces, the God of Israel, proclaims, don't let the prophets and diviners in your midst mislead you. Don't pay attention to your dreams. They are prophesying lies to you in my name. I didn't send them, declares the Lord. The Lord proclaims, when Babylon's 70 years are up, I will come and fulfill my gracious promise to bring you back to this place. I know the plans I have in mind for you, declares the Lord. They are plans for peace, not disaster, to give you a future filled with hope. When you call me and come and pray to me, I will listen to you. When you search for me, yes, search for me with all your heart, you will find me. I will be present for you, declares the Lord. And I will end your captivity. I will gather you from all the nations and places where I have scattered you, and I will bring you home after your long exile, declares the Lord. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Years ago, there was a cartoon in the New Yorker. It depicted people walking through the gates into hell. And above the entrance, there was that famous quotation from Dante's Inferno, "Abandon all hope, ye who enter here." But in this particular cartoon, just below the sign, there was a parenthetical comment. And inside the parentheses, it said, "If you have already abandoned all hope, please disregard this notice." And if you didn't laugh, it might be because you didn't think it was funny. But it might also be because true hopelessness is not a laughing matter. And we know that. Humor might be for some people a coping device, but hopelessness itself is not a laughing matter. It might be something to laugh through, but it is never something to laugh at. And there are many reasons why someone might feel hopeless. Someone might be experiencing the depths of depression and has been for many years. Someone might be going through a long and difficult divorce. Someone might be experiencing intense loneliness. And the holiday period, as many people gather with family and friends, only exacerbates their feelings of loneliness. And someone may be going through a long, protracted period of unemployment with hundreds and hundreds of resumes being sent out with scarcely any response from potential employers. And someone might have received an unexpected medical diagnosis. And all of a sudden, all of the plans that have been so long in the making are no longer practical, no longer sure. And if for any reason you have already abandoned hope, then the prophet Jeremiah has a word for you. According to Jeremiah, God speaks directly to us and says, I know the plans I have for you, plans for your welfare and not for harm, to give you a future with hope. And that is the promise of a future with hope. And it's important to pay attention to what these verses say and what they don't say. There's nothing here to indicate that God has absolutely everything planned out for us, as if we were just puppets on a string with God as the puppeteer. Instead, the intention is to provide for our welfare and to give us a future with hope. In Jeremiah 29:11, I know the plans I have for you, has become many people's favorite verse, and you can go to stores like Michael's and find it on pillows and cross-stitching. Or someone might post on Facebook, we just bought the house of our dreams, hashtag blessed, hashtag Jeremiah 29:11. And I have no doubt that in that situation, they do feel blessed. But the promise isn't necessarily for a particular house or a particular job. The promise is for a future with hope. And that promise includes each one of us as individuals, but more to the point, it includes all of us as a people. When Jeremiah quotes the Lord as saying, I know the plans I have for you, that word you in the Hebrew is plural. If you translated Jeremiah 29:11 from the Hebrew into Southern English, then it would read, I know the plans I have for y'all. And if you were to translate it into Texas English, which has some subtle distinctions from Southern English, then it would be, I know the plans I have for all y'all. The promise is for a future for all of us, a future filled with hope. Now, this is what was happening in Jeremiah's day. In the year 597 before the Common Era, the Babylonians raided Jerusalem and kidnapped the king. And in the king's place, they set up a puppet ruler. They also took away many of the Jerusalem elites and took them back to Babylon. And this was the first wave of exiles. And then what happened 10 years later in 587 is that the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar completely destroyed Jerusalem, including Solomon's temple, and took away even more of the Jews into exile. Now, if you look on the cover of your bulletin this morning, there is a painting of Jeremiah, and he's sitting amidst the ruins of Jerusalem, and he's writing. A lot of what Jeremiah wrote in the book of Jeremiah was written like that, with Jeremiah sitting in the midst of the rubble and writing down the letters. Now, most scholars think that this letter that we read this morning might have been written in between the two catastrophic events, after the Babylonians have raided Jerusalem for the first time, but before they completely destroyed it. And during this time, there was a rival prophet to Jeremiah named Hananiah. And Hananiah has taken to social media, and he's saying things like the exiles will be in Babylon for only 2 years tops. And then God will utterly destroy the Babylonians and all the exiles will joyously come back home. Hashtag, just you wait. But Jeremiah is saying that the exile will last 70 years, not 70 days, not 70 months, but 70 years. Which prophet would you have preferred to listen to? And as it turned out, Hananiah would be dead within a year, and Jeremiah was proven right, although I'm sure that in this situation, even Jeremiah would have loved to have been proven wrong. But the promise is for a future with hope, but it's a long view of the future. It's a view that acknowledges the 70 years of exile, but still declares to proclaim a future with hope. Now, this doesn't mean that we have to sit around passively and wait for our hopeful future. What it can mean instead is that in light of this future filled with hope, what are the signs of that future unfolding even now in our midst? as Mr. Rogers was saying after 9/11, look for the helpers. If you're overwhelmed by the catastrophe and full of fear about terrorism and what can happen, if you're perplexed about all the evil in the world, look around for the helpers. Look for signs that there are, even now, people of grace and compassion and great hospitality and people of love who are willing to meet you where you are. In our own time, many church historians and theologians have been using the metaphor of exile to explain what's happening in our particular cultural moment. Many people in the church remember the days when the church had a more prominent role in society and in the culture as a whole. And for quite a while now, it feels like the church has been losing that, perhaps experiencing a kind of exile, which the pandemic only accelerated. And to be exiled doesn't have to mean that you're carted off to live in a foreign land. A more profound sense of exile might be to feel like an exile in your own land, or even in your own home. And as a church, we might feel exiled because we're trying to figure out how to find our way in a new cultural moment. We don't know how things will turn out. And as a nation, many of us may feel a profound sense of exile, no matter where you are on the political spectrum. There may be the sense that things shouldn't be quite like they are, that this isn't how we remembered it, that somehow we've gotten away from the home country even though we never left home. And to the exiles in Babylon and to us, Jeremiah is promising a future with hope. It's a hope for the long haul. It's a hope that transcends the 24-hour news cycle and the constant fluctuations of our political process and all the ups and downs. It's that kind of hope. And again, as we pray the Lord's Prayer Sunday after Sunday and say, "Your kingdom come and be here on earth just as it is in heaven," we don't have to sit around and passively wait for that to happen. We can pray that prayer faithfully as we've been doing. And then we can look around for the signs of God's realm, breaking through even now. Where was the utterly unexpected act of hospitality? Where was the almost shocking act of grand forgiveness in light of a terrible wrong? Where are the people working for peace when it seems like the whole world is eager for war? Those are the things that we can look for. And in the meantime, Jeremiah says, build houses and live in them, plant gardens, eat what they produce. It may take 7 years to even get a vineyard starting, but you've got plenty of time, start a vineyard. Seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you and pray to the Lord on its behalf, because in its welfare, you will find your welfare. One of my preacher colleagues calls this kind of work the hard and beautiful work of everyday life. And the theologian Reinhold Niebuhr once said that nothing worthwhile can be achieved fully in a single lifetime. Therefore, we are saved by hope. And as someone else has said, the great work did not begin with you, and it's not going to end with you either. But it's something that you are privileged to do for this short while. Joseph Sittler was an influential theologian and teacher. And for many years, he taught at the University of Chicago. And after he retired, he moved down the street and taught for a few more years at the Lutheran School of Theology. And the Lutheran School of Theology shares a campus with McCormick Seminary, which is where I earned my Doctor of Ministry degree. And for 3 summers in a row, I would have to spend 3 weeks in Chicago, which is the best time to be in Chicago, and so it was great. And among the stories about Joseph Sittler that are still being told is how he used to purchase small seedlings and go around the campus in the springtime planting them. He didn't always ask the Buildings and Grounds Committee permission ahead of time, but he just did it. And because he was Joseph Sittler, they let him do it. But he also knew a lot about gardening, so he was putting the trees in the right places anyway. And he was a consummate realist with a finely honed sense of sin, something that he called human cussedness that was relentless. He wasn't naive about the human capacity for evil. But even so, he was always hopeful in God's providence and love, and a hope visually symbolized by this great theologian in his 70s, nearly blind, down on his knees, planting a tree. Now, I never got to meet Joseph Sittler in person. He died many years before I began my studies. But I was able to sit beneath several of the trees that he had planted. All glory and praise be to our God. Amen.